guess what time it is? It's teacher time. Woohoo! Welcome. This is Sarah Beach, your host for Every Child's Champion podcast. And I want to welcome you back, and I hope you're all doing well. Today's topic for the podcast is math. Yahoo! Fun, right? Your favorite subject? Not usually. But guess what? It can be fun to teach math concepts to little kids, see them grow and learn, use their reasoning skills. Can actually be fun if you know what you're doing. So the goal of this podcast is to help you know more about what you're doing, what concepts kids are learning about in the topic of math. And primarily, we're going to focus on the tool, the Eckers 3. And actually, we're breaking this topic down into two different podcasts because there's just a lot of content here. So I've broken it down into part one and part two. So today is part one, and I will be talking today about the basics of how children learn math concepts, as well as going into what those concepts actually are that they are learning, and what the skills are that they're learning to be able to do with their knowledge. And then thirdly, what are the higher level cognitive processes that they're able to engage in at this age that we should be challenging them with, and how to challenge them and push their thinking to higher levels so that they're not learning just by rote, but in fact, they're learning how to think and they're using their thinking powers at higher levels to figure out problems, to come up with solutions, to analyze materials and analyze situations and make lots and lots of new connections, to use their powers of reasoning, in other words. And I will be going through Eckers item number 23, which is math, materials, and activity. So that's what I'll be talking about today. And then in part two of the podcast, we will be covering the Eckers item number 24 and item number 25. Math and daily events, and understanding written numbers. And then we'll wrap it all up with a bow at the end. And by the way, I will be providing resources and links to some videos for you on the show notes for this podcast. So to access our resources, simply go to synapseearlylearning.com and select podcast, and the show notes tab will be there. Select podcast number 12, part 1 or part 2. Okay, so you ready? Let's get started. Here we go. Woo-hoo! Let's talk about math, math concepts, math skills, math thinking, challenging mathematical thinking, using our materials to engage children's minds. We're talking about the Eckers 3. We're going to use the Eckers 3 as our lens, or our sort of our guidebook here today. The Eckers 3 Early Childhood Environmental Rating Scale, 3rd edition, gives us 3 new items that we didn't have before. It breaks down how math should be happening in classroom. Gives us a lot more information about what to do and how to do it. So I love these. I love the Eckers for this. I'm excited about being able to share with you my take on how to actually slay these 3 new math items and score really high and really get some good learning outcomes for your students. That's what it's all about, right? All right, if your state assesses your classroom on the Eckers 3, that's great. Or if they assess you on the Eckers R, this would apply. If they don't use the Eckers at all in your state, this is still really, really good information and can help you a lot if you're struggling with math. Or even if you're not struggling, if you're just not doing very much math teaching, if you're not thinking about math on a daily basis, this is great stuff for you. Because, truth be told, math achievement in pre-K is actually predictive of later math achievement. And not only later math achievement, but actually reading achievement. So children who have good math experiences during preschool, bottom line, are just really smart when they get to kindergarten and first grade, and they're learning how to read and do things like addition and subtraction. Children really need first-hand experience with lots and lots of hands-on materials in order to develop early math skills. And that's why pre-K. That's why it's so important for infant and toddler environments as well as pre-K environments to be all about hands-on experiences, play-based learning and exploration. They need so much experience with manipulating objects, moving things around in space, learning about the size of things, learning about how things fit together, learning about how things add up, you know, just in terms of when I get these blocks here and I want it to be longer, I need to add more blocks. You know, very simple play-based exploration things that give them a foundation for later understanding of much more advanced concepts. So what we're talking about is, how do kids learn reasoning? How do kids learn about number? How do they learn about number properties? How do they learn about quantities, measurements, all of the things related to number and math that we need them to learn in preschool? We want to go back to the very, you know, beginning of asking, how do kids learn in general? And really look at that. You know, one of the reasons I'm using the Eckers 3 as a guide is because it provides a lot of specific information on what should be going on in classrooms. Not only what materials can help you or should be used for math, but even more importantly, what kinds of interactions should you be having with them? What kinds of teaching experiences, learning experience should you be setting up for the kids? And where, when, and how in your classroom do children learn about math? So these tools like the Eckers and the class, these are really just how-to guides for how to teach. So let's take a look at the Eckers, and I'll just give you a brief overview of the Eckers 3 so that if you're not familiar with it, you know what we're talking about from the outset here. Eckers 3 has 35 items organized within 6 different subscales. So there are subscales for looking at space and furnishings, personal care routines, language and literacy, learning activities, interactions, and program structure. So there's a category or a sort of a scale for each of those different topics. And we're looking at the items number 23, 24, and 25 that have to do with math and number. Okay, so item number 23 is specifically looking at math materials and the activities that you do with those materials. What math materials you have, where you have them, and how you are using them. Item number 24 is called Math in Daily Events. So, the goal here is to make children aware of how math is useful in our daily lives by using math words and concepts during non-math activities. So when you're not teaching specifically a math lesson, per se, and you're not at the math center, if you have a math center, but you are just engaged in regular play, regular daily life activities somewhere in the room, we're using math words and concepts. And here is a quick tip. I am putting a list of concepts, all the math concepts that I can come up with, on my notes pages for this podcast, my show notes. And you can find that on my website at synapseearlylearning.com under the podcast show notes page. And look that up, because that has a list of all the concepts. And I would really recommend that you create a poster for your classroom, for you, not for the kids, just for you, and for your assistant teacher or your co-teacher, a list of math concepts. Because when your children are circulating around the room and they're looking for things to do, one or more of them will sit down and play with magnet tiles. One or more of them will sit down and do a puzzle. Some of them may go to the science area and look at the natural materials you have. Somebody will go to the manipulatives and choose Legos or links or counters. You know, there's all kinds of opportunities for math activities that come up naturally in the regular play choices that children make. What you want to do is be ready with recognizing what concepts they potentially could learn from those materials. The concepts are embedded in what they're doing, but you have to be able to capitalize on those teachable moments and bring up those words and concepts in context. And if you're a really, really good teacher, what you do in those teachable moments is you connect the concepts that you're talking about with kids in the moment. You connect those back to whatever your unit is of study, whatever you've been talking about lately. So if you've been talking about transportation, for example, and a child happens to go to the magnetiles and they're working with magnetiles and they're putting different shapes together as they do, they're just snapping all kinds of pieces together. You go over there and you start talking about the shapes that they have, and you start asking them questions about what they're making, and you can connect the shapes back to the topic of or unit of transportation. Wow, you've got lots of shapes here. That kind of reminds me of the dump truck we were looking at in the book this morning. Remember how it has a square up in front and then it had a big rectangle behind and some smaller circles on the bottom for the wheels? That's what that reminded me of. And you're kind of making one, looks like. Actually, all the vehicles we've been talking about, they're all made up of different shapes, aren't they? I wonder if we could make an airplane with some of these triangular shapes. Got lots of triangles. Let's try to make an airplane. So I'm just giving you an example of you know, how you would connect some math concepts, i.e. the shapes, to what they're actually doing in the moment, the manipulatives that they're playing with, and connecting that back to the unit of study that they've been engaged in, to make everything kind of fit together. And you're making connections across the curriculum in all the different areas and all the different activities that they're engaged in. And you don't have to talk about transportation in every single moment. But if they've been having conversations about dump trucks and now they've moved on to magnetiles and shapes, making a connection makes sense, because they probably didn't notice that vehicles have different shapes because you haven't pointed it out before. But you've been talking about different vehicles, and now you're talking about shapes, and they're manipulating shapes. So it's a great time to make those connections and talk about how vehicles can be made up of different shapes. So put a poster up to remind you of all the different things you potentially could be teaching them in those moments. So what we want to talk about today is what are all the concepts that children are able to learn about during this stage of the game, 3 to 5 years old, in the pre-K period. What are the skills that they're developing that they need in order to progress in furthering their understanding of math? And how do they learn these concepts? How do they learn these concepts and skills? What toys and activities can be used? And really, bottom line, how exactly do you teach these concepts and skills? Where, when, and how? So we're going to be talking a lot about play-based learning, because the best kind of learning happens in play, that's unstructured and that's child-directed. And so you can embed math teaching and learning into all your centers throughout the classroom. You don't have to have a specific math center to teach math. You don't even have to have a specific group time where you say, this is math time. Or today, you know, on Mondays we do math, or on Thursdays we do math. You can teach all the math you need to teach right within the context of children's play. So way more than just counting. We're talking about all kinds of different concepts and capabilities. So let's talk a little bit about how do kids learn anyway? You know, how do they really begin to develop conceptual understandings and develop knowledge? It begins, of course, in infancy when children are having experiences with their parents and with their caregivers on a daily basis. And if you think about the typical infant, you might look at them and say, well, he or she doesn't necessarily form concepts in their mind. You know, what concepts does a newborn baby know? They know generalities, right? They know the sound of their mother's voice. They know the sound of their father's voice, probably. They know that when they cry, they're likely to be picked up. They start to learn these connections early on. And learning is multiple connections that are being made over time, building upon each other. And so by the time the child gets to be old enough to hold a toy, they're learning about the toy, right? They're learning more about the world. They start by learning about their immediate bodies. And, you know, when I cry, something happens. When I smile, mom smiles back, et cetera, et cetera. When I move my hand, it's interesting and I can make it do, you know, different things that I want it to do. They quickly move into the stage where they're learning to manipulate objects. And once they can manipulate objects, they start to learn about the properties of objects. And they start to learn about things like cause and effect. And, you know, when I shake this rattle, it makes an interesting sound. So I'm going to do that again. When I hit these things on my mobile, they jiggle and they move. And that's really cool. And so they learn through cause and effect, they learn through experience, and they learn through play. As they're getting older, they're starting to crawl and starting to move. And we know that this sensory motor period is when children really start acting on their environments. They move around, they get to where they want to be, they touch things, they mouth things, they're exploring. And so they're starting to learn concepts. But conceptual understanding really takes off when children develop language, because every word that a child learns is also a concept, if you think about it. They learn the word up when mommy says, you want up, when they're raising their hand, and then she picks you up. So you're learning through the experience of raising your hands and having mom react, giving you a word. Up allows you to begin to internalize that concept of up versus down. Or things like on and off. Turn the light on. Can you push it on? You know, turn it on, turn it off. So in this period, this early period of development, children are acting upon the world and they're using their physical motor skills to experiment and explore their world. And then words come into play when they start learning language. And words are closely connected with thoughts. If you have a word and you understand the meaning of a word, then you also have a thought. Acting on the world develops the child's skills. When they get to be about one to two, they start to understand symbols like words. Understanding that words have meaning become thoughts. Thoughts are what are needed in order for children to begin understanding concepts like concepts of math. And all of those early experiences that they're having exploring their world and the objects in their world are really critical foundational pieces for being able to later on connect concepts. Okay, so we've talked about how they build concepts, how they, from infancy on up, how they use their experiences in the world to develop awareness and later on words and concepts. So let's talk specifically about how we're teaching these math concepts and skills in pre-K. I tend to think about learning math in three different sort of buckets. One is the words or vocabulary the child learns. The second is the reasoning powers that the child is utilizing, the higher order thinking processes that have to happen in order for children to figure out math concepts and to engage in certain skills. And the third bucket is the actual skills that the child is able to engage in. So let's start with bucket number one, the words. When you learn a word and what that word means, that's a concept, right? That's a conceptual understanding. So learning the word red, blue, green, those are all words, but they're concepts too, because the particular word goes with a particular shade or hue. So there are a lot of words and concepts that children need to learn about. And how do children learn words? By hearing words, right? They learn new words by hearing those words used in context. So we read stories, we do finger plays, we sing songs, anything that involves language and talking about what characteristics are of the materials that they're using. As they are using them. As they are exploring the materials, we are giving them the words. We're mapping the language onto what it is they are looking at and feeling and touching. And so a lot of learning in general, a lot of learning has to do with language, but in terms of math, we're talking about giving them these concepts as they are engaged with the materials or as they are looking at the pictures in a book. And so that really requires us to know what the materials, what math concepts or words the materials are good for. If you have a whole bunch of different kinds of manipulatives, some of them are different shapes, some of them are different lengths, some of them are different colors, we need to know what we're talking about. There are a lot of math concepts in the early years that children are starting to be exposed to. What are some of those concepts? Funny you should ask. Let me just share some of those with you. Of course, we have number and number concepts, like every time I see this particular game or this bead abacus thing, my mommy says 1, 2, 3, and they start in their early, 18 months to 2 years old, beginning to say 1, 2, 3, right? They may not understand the numbers. They certainly don't understand the numbers yet, but they understand the words. 1, 2, 3 is what I'm supposed to say. And so we want to do that. We want to teach them to count things. We want to teach them to point and count. But so many more concepts that they're also able to learn at this age. They're learning about spatial awareness. Where are things in space and how do I move them around? How do I move my body around, but how do I also move objects around? Shape awareness. They're beginning to learn the names of shapes and to recognize when things have a straight line or a circular pattern, a circular shape. And so early on, we give babies shape sorters, right? Starting at about 18 months, we start giving babies shape sorters where they may not know the name of the shape, but they're learning about the properties of the shape by turning it around and comparing it to the holes. They gradually are developing this awareness of shapes. They're also beginning to learn about positions, the order that things come in. And so put this first. First we have to put your shoes on. First we have to put your socks on. Then we can put your shoes on. Now we can get your coat on. They learn about first and next and then, those basic positions. And this is all happening, and by the time they're age 3, really, they're starting to learn these things. Numbers, numerals, one-to-one correspondence, the order of things, the concept of first, second, third, etc. More, less, equal to, the concepts of position, such as under and over, high and low, long and short, same and different. These are all concepts related to the materials they may be working with, the shapes of things, the different categories that you can bring up, such as all the blue ones or all the small blue ones, all the animals versus all the wild animals. There are concepts of weight, volume, speed, distance, patterns. So I've listed out a lot of these concepts that you can apply to the manipulatives and the different materials in your classroom. Even things like musical instruments have math concepts related to them. You could talk about rhythm. You could talk about how many times you're tapping. You can talk about the speed of the music that they're listening to. There's just all kinds of concepts that potentially relate with math. And so every different set of manipulatives, or really every different toy, gives us the opportunity to bring up math concepts by describing the properties and the characteristics of the materials. This one is longer. You have the longer one, and I have the shorter one. For example, if you have a child who's playing with, Lincoln Logs, building with blocks. I have the long one. Oh, I need another short one to go on the end here. So giving the child those words frequently in play is what really gives the foundation for learning the more difficult concepts and skills later on. And your challenge really just becomes recognizing these concepts when they come up in play. And to do that, I recommend having them written down so that you're familiar, not only familiar with them, but that you are constantly confronted with them so that you don't forget them. And go through each of your manipulatives, for example, and write down what concepts these toys are highlighting. You know, to become a really good teacher, you need to be an intentional teacher. And being intentional means you've thought about it ahead of time. And you have made some plans on paper, I recommend on paper, where you have thought through, okay, what am I going to be teaching? When am I going to be teaching it? How am I going to be teaching it? And it's not just about creating lesson plans. Lesson planning is the formal process you go through to make sure that things go smoothly and you basically have some structure to your teaching. But what I'm talking about is the plans that you make for incidental teaching moments, for those teachable moments that come up that you didn't plan for, because children always make choices throughout the day of what they want to learn about in any particular moment. They may or may not be on track with what you were planning to teach about. So you have to be ready to take advantage of those teachable moments and know what the concepts are that you can teach. You also can refer to your assessment tool, your creative curriculum gold instrument, or your early learning outcomes framework if you're using that in Head Start, or whatever assessment tool you are utilizing to match up the skills and the learning with the different materials that you have in your classroom. And make sure that you are ready for when those materials are utilized. So here is where you can put that list of concepts to work for you in your classroom. And I'll mention that I have included this in my podcast notes today, all the concepts that I could come up with and all the skills really that children are developing with these materials. I have provided a bunch of pictures of manipulatives for you, and I have next to each picture I've listed out all the different types of skills and concepts that you potentially could bring up with children. And so what I would recommend is having a card next to each box of manipulatives, or you could have a laminated card within the box of manipulatives that you just pull out and have available for yourself when children are using that material. Okay, I mentioned that the second bucket that I think about is the higher order thinking powers that children utilize as they are manipulating objects and manipulating concepts in their mind. So when we challenge their thinking and ask them some of these difficult questions, like which one is longer here? Is yours longer or is mine longer? How do you know that? Or how can you make a long rectangle with those squares that you have? Can you figure that out? You know, asking them to use reasoning powers is the second bucket of math learning that I think about. So once a child, for example, understands that there are many different shapes and what the names of some of those different shapes are, once they understand the language and the concepts of triangle, square, circle, rectangle, for example, they then can use higher order thinking properties to compare and contrast those different shapes. Tell me about the circle and the square. What's the difference between the circle and the square? So we're asking them to use some words to compare and contrast, and that's a higher order thinking process. That's a reasoning skill, a reasoning power, right? They also are developing skills, though. The other bucket that I talked about, the skill of identifying the shapes, the skill of sorting the shapes into groupings, for example, the skill of matching shapes in a shape sorter, for example. And so there are always skills involved with the concept. Another example would be if you're teaching a child about measurement, they're learning the words longer and shorter and, you know, thicker, thinner, wider, etc. And they're learning the idea of a length or a width, that it's a measurement. They're learning the idea or the concept of a weight, something's weight has to do with how heavy it is or how it feels in your hand compared to another lighter thing. And so as they're learning these concepts, they are also engaging with the materials and they're developing the skills of actually weighing the different items. They're learning how to measure things. So there's the concept, but there's also the skill involved in actually measuring a length or a weight. Then you can engage in some higher order thinking processes and you can compare different lengths. Let's find out which one of these is taller. Which one of these towers is taller? And so they can measure each one and utilize their reasoning powers to recognize that the one that has a longer measurement will be the one that's taller. And so, again, those three buckets that I kind of think about are the words and the concepts in one bucket, the skills that the child is gaining that have to do with math, and also their higher order reasoning powers, the different kinds of reasoning that children engage in to be able to predict and experiment with things and to be able to compare things, contrast things, to be able to problem solve and figure things out, to be able to engage in trial and order experimentation, etc., etc. Those are all higher order powers. And we're primarily using the Eckers as our lens today, but if you want to learn more about those higher order thinking skills and how to engage children in that level of thinking, which is way more than rote learning, the class assessment scoring system is a great tool for that. And I really think that it complements the Eckers wonderfully for teachers who are ready for this. If you want to add to your poster on the wall, I would say make a list of the concept development skills that are provided in the class under concept development. And check out podcast number 7 for lots more on concept development. That whole podcast was dedicated to analysis and reasoning and stimulating children's higher order thought processes. And I gave you a lot of resources on the website under podcast number 7 in our podcast notes. So check that out. So now that we've established all of that, let's take a look at the three Eckers, three subscales that have to do with math and talk about where all these words, concepts, skills, and thinking processes will fit in our teaching throughout the day. I mentioned that the item number 23 called math materials has to do with the materials children play with and learn from and the math-related activities that you offer in the classroom with the intent of pointing out math concepts. So they give us three categories of math materials, and at the 5.1 level you have to have at least three from each category with 10 materials total. So you're going to have 3, 3, and 4 if you have 10 materials. You're going to have 3 in 1, 3 in another, 4 in another. But let's look at what some of these materials are. You want the first category is counting and comparing quantities. The second category is measuring and comparing sizes and parts of wholes. And the last category is shapes. So with counting, you may have things like an abacus, beads and bead patterns, dice, dominoes, games that require children to figure out more or less, games with dice, pegboards, puzzles, where there are written numbers matched to quantities, small objects to count in numbered containers, such as teddy bear counters, etc. You may have Unifix cubes, anything that has to do with counting and quantities. And you have to have at least three of those things from each category. In the measuring category, you would have things like a balance scale, a scale, a bathroom scale, games where you match halves to wholes, such as card games with fractions, or parts of wholes, like a pizza game where you have 6 pieces of pizza in a circle and or 8 pieces, etc. Games with parts to divide and put back together to make the whole. You might have things like nested cups, puzzles that have geometric shapes that have to be put together, rulers, yardsticks, tape measurers, shapes matching games where geometric shapes are divided into parts. So anything to do with parts, fractions, or measurement. You might have a thermometer, you might have measuring cups. All of those things have to do with measurement, right? And then in the shapes category, they want you to have at least three of the following attribute blocks with different colors, shapes, or sizes. Geo boards, which are the boards that have the pegs in them and you use rubber bands to make shapes. Magnetic shapes, Parker tree blocks, puzzles with different geometric shapes, shape sorters, shape stencils, unit blocks with image outline labels on shelves during cleanup. So in other words, you would have rectangular, triangular, square, different shapes outlined on the shelves. That counts as shapes. Anything to do with shapes is going to count in that category. So focus on those three categories of counting or quantities, measuring or sizes, and then shapes. Those are the three categories. And you would have a wide selection of materials. And I'll put a checklist on our podcast website for the podcast notes. For checking your classroom to make sure you have enough of the required materials. There are Eckers checklists you can probably find online, just Google it, but I've got one that I found somewhere and I doctored it to work for me when I go out and do observations, so I will put that on the website. But what the Eckers 3 also looks at, and this is really, 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 really important, is how you engage with children with those materials. This Eckers 3 is looking at more than just the accessibility and the availability of materials. They are looking at how are you using the materials. So in some sense, it's really not as important what the actual materials are as it is what are you doing with them? You know, what are you engaging in interactions with children, utilizing the words that go with those items. So at the minimal level, they're looking for you to ask some questions, some basic questions about the math materials. Which one is longer, for example? To get to a little bit of a higher level, which is the mid-range or at a 5, observers are looking for you to frequently join in or initiate play, encourage children to use their fingers to represent number, help children use materials successfully. So that's the level I see a lot when I'm observing classrooms, is that staff are initiating or joining in play, and they're basically helping children to use materials, and they're engaging in some very basic conversations. But at the highest level, at the high level, the excellent level, you would need to ask questions about math materials that stimulate reasoning skills. You would have to ask higher order thinking kinds of questions, which is one of the reasons I talked about the three different buckets being concepts, skills, and higher order thinking strategies. We want to get to that high level, right? The way that you can slay this subscale is by having the materials but using them at this high level. And so once you know that the child has the basic concepts down and knows the basic vocabulary, you want to push for asking how and why questions rather than what questions. In fact, even if you don't know whether the child knows the difference between a square and a circle, it's best to ask how and why questions rather than what questions. Because if you ask them, how is this one different from this one? They have to know square and circle in order to tell you the difference between a square and a circle. So they're going to have to know the basic words, square and circle, and the basic concepts in order to answer that question. And if they don't know how they're different, then you're challenging their thinking. How do you think they're different? I don't know. Well, which one is round? Can you point to the one that's round? And they point to the circle. Do you remember what that one's called? Now, you know, as you're scaffolding for them, that's a good time to ask the what question. So first you start out with the how and why question, how or why question, and then if necessary, you can scaffold by asking follow-up questions such as what shape is this? What is this one called? Which one is round? Classifying, putting things in order, sequencing, experimenting with materials in a trial and error sort of way, and predicting what's going to happen, predicting, is this one going to fit in this hole? Is this round piece here going to fit in this square hole? What do you think? You know, predicting and then experimenting. And so the teacher's role there is to ask those difficult questions and to encourage the child to experiment. Also, other higher order processes would be problem solving. Uh-oh, what are we going to do if these don't fit? What shape do we need to find a different shape? Or you said you wanted to make yours taller than mine, but right now your block structure is shorter than mine. So what do you need to do to make it taller than mine? So you're engaging them in thinking processes. The bottom line with the Eckers 3, I think, that's different from the Eckers R, is that the way you are engaging with kids, the way you're interacting, the way that you're teaching, is that you're encouraging them to think things through for themselves instead of rote learning where you're just telling them, yours is taller than mine, right? That's a very basic teaching. This is a circle, this is a triangle, this is a square. That's sort of rote learning. And so that's a very basic level, which, as we said, children do need to learn the names of the shapes. But what we're really pushing for is to learn those names and utilize those concepts by employing higher order thinking processes. So the kinds of questions you ask become really, really important. Asking a lot of how and why questions instead of the what questions is going to be the trick here. Another trick I'll point out, and this trick really goes for any of the Eckers subscales in any topic you're teaching. In addition to asking higher order thinking questions more than rote questions, is you want to do a lot of querying children's thinking processes. So what does that mean, querying their thinking processes? It basically just means asking them what they're thinking and why. So asking them about their thinking, asking them to talk about what's going on in their minds. So questions like this, asking, well, why did you do it this way? Oh, can you tell me why you did that? Well, how did you know that? How did you figure that out? Are you sure? Asking, are you sure? Are you sure about that? Tell me how you know that. You know, kind of puzzling and saying, are you sure about that? Any of those kinds of questions that asks children to tell us about their thinking are going to push you into a much higher range on the Eckers scale, as well as on the class, if you're talking about the class assessment scoring system. So the two keys I've pointed out so far are asking more how and why questions than what questions, and querying children's thinking processes, asking them to tell us what they're thinking and why. If you engage in a lot of both of those, you're going to automatically be pushing your scores up and engaging in math teaching and other teaching at much higher levels, as measured by the Eckers. You know, the other scoring items under the 7 range, which is the highest range on the Eckers for math materials and activities, are 7.1, which says staff relate math materials and activities to current topics of interest. And number 7.3, which says some appropriate math activities requiring more teacher input are used. For example, sorting seashells by type on a chart and comparing more and less. Reading thermometer to chart daily temperature, or measuring while doing a cooking activity. And they only have to observe that once. So it's these higher level thinking processes incorporated within an activity that they're looking for here. One example during the whole morning, they just need to see one example of a teacher directed activity or a teacher assisted activity in which a teacher guided activity such as cooking or a science experiment or a sorting game. Most teachers don't have difficulty coming up with teacher-guided activities. So we just want to incorporate measurement or number or counting or charting kinds of things into your teacher-guided activity whenever possible. And you're relating math concepts to your current topic of interest, your current topic of study. I mentioned that earlier, how important that is, and I just want to reiterate that because there are always ways to bring these math concepts up when we are doing a study. when we are learning about a topic, right? And in most classrooms, there is a theme or a topic or a unit of study that goes on for at least a week, if not several weeks. And so when you're planning your unit of study, I encourage you to take a look at your list of math concepts and your list of math skills and have that close by when you are doing your lesson planning about your unit of study, because all you have to ask yourself is, with this unit or this topic that we're talking about this week, how can we incorporate shapes, numbers, and measurement into this topic? Well, everything has a shape, and everything kids are learning about comes in numbers. Comes in amounts. Everything kids are learning about potentially can be measured. Think about it. I brought up the topic of vehicles earlier, or transportation. What if you were to go out in the parking lot and measure the bus? Wouldn't that be an awesome activity? Of course, doing what you need to do to provide for the safety of the children outdoors near the parking lot. But what an opportunity to allow children to talk about how big buses are. And even compare them to the size of a typical car and talk about how big do they think it is anyway? How many feet long is a bus? Is our school bus? And make some predictions, perhaps. This is a great opportunity to create a chart where each child is predicting how many feet the bus is, and then the actual number, seeing who's closest. And you're looking at not only measurement, but number there, and quantity, and the depiction of the numerals. So what a wonderful opportunity. And all within the context of, you know, teaching about the vehicles. But relating your really important math concepts of number and measurement back to your unit of study is really fairly easy to do when you think about it. The example I gave earlier of bringing up shapes when the child is working with magnetiles, that's an example of doing it on the fly, doing it at the spur of the moment, which you want to be able to do. You certainly want to be able to capitalize on those teachable moments and bring your math concepts into the activity that they're doing, but connect that back to something they've been learning about. And the reason I think that this is such a high-level practice and gets you so many points is that it really does, you know, making connections is what learning, real learning, is all about. It's taking something as abstract as triangle, rectangle, or the names of the shapes or the names of the numbers even, and tying it back to something very meaningful and very tangible that the children have been interested in and learning about recently. So you're taking something they've already learned about and you are very intentionally connecting it with this new concept. And that's not so easy to do. It's not something you just think of all the time. So I want you to know that I'm trying to be very explicit with you in giving you the recommendation that you write down some of these strategies, that you create a poster or you have a cue card of some sort to remind you. Draw a connection between the materials, the concepts that the materials are teaching, and the topic that the students have been learning about. With the class instrument, the class assessment scoring system, they call this integration. This comes up in the concept development dimension, and they call it integration. We're integrating concepts together. And, you know, there's basically two ways to do that. Taking two concepts and making them very explicit in how they're related to children, but also relating a new piece of information or a new concept to something that's already firmly embedded in their mind, because we know this is how learning happens. Whenever you learn something, you're connecting your new knowledge or new construct to what's already firmly connected. And I pictured in the brain as synapses that are growing. So anyway, this applies to any unit or any topic of study that you've been working on. This is also why your displays on your walls are so useful and so important as a part of the Eckers instrument. They have an item under space and furnishings. They have an item called child-related display. And they want to see current examples of posters, charts, word wall, words, measurements, graphs, pictures, artwork, that are current to the topic of study that you are currently on. And I think it would just be brilliant if you could incorporate into some of them some examples of measurement, and if you could incorporate into some of them some examples of shapes. You could always take any math concepts that you'd like to expand upon and add them to your displays. But making a connection between what the children are learning about and the math concepts is what we're talking about here. So hopefully in your charts on the wall, you've got examples of what the children have been talking about. Now you just need to use those wall displays and make connections to number, measurement, and shapes. Lastly, I just want to issue you a challenge. You want to be a teacher who teaches through rote learning, through drilling children on facts and information? Or do you want to be a teacher who inspires thinking in your students, who inspires children to make real meaning and develop new understanding of how the world works? See, rote learning involves acquiring a bunch of random facts. It involves basically memorizing a bunch of information, going through all of the colors every day, going through all of the shapes every day. Teachers who point to a chart and kids have to identify what numbers and what letters they see. That's all rote learning, and it's very disconnected from real meaning for students, which is why students become disengaged, misbehave, or wander off. And if they can't wander off, they get in trouble for not sitting still while being bored. Sorry, this is a bit of a soapbox for me, but I just want to encourage you, think about what kind of a teacher you want to be, because you have the opportunity to share a passion for finding out about the world. You have an opportunity to inspire your students to become interested in finding out about new things. Making connections is exciting learning. Okay, well, we have gotten through item number 23 related to math on the Eckers 3. And we've talked about what you have to have and what you have to do. And so, again, just going to sum it all up here by saying it's about materials in your environment, but it's even more than that. It's about how you are using those materials with children in a very intentional way, how you are teaching math concepts throughout the day. So look at all your manipulatives, and I encourage you to be very intentional and thoughtful about pinning down what are the math concepts that children are learning from these different toys. And if they don't immediately come to mind, I recommend that you make yourself some cue cards, make yourself some cards of some sort where you are writing down the concepts and writing down the skills that you're measuring, that you're observing in children and teaching, so that you can be very intentional about it when you're in these different areas. I encourage you to reflect on your own teaching practices and reflect, just this week, reflect on how you typically teach math, what are the concepts that you typically teach around math, and how do you usually do it. If your method of teaching math is that math is at a set time each week, in a set place, and that you typically do it one way, such as in small group activities, I encourage you to just expand your thinking and think about how math concepts can come up throughout the day, throughout the environment, with many, many different materials, if you're only just thinking about math concepts. So how can you challenge yourself to keep math on your brain more so that you will talk about these concepts with children? That's my challenge for you for the week, and I hope this was a helpful discussion for you. If you have the Eckers tool, I encourage you to go to the math subscales and just review those, and do whatever you have to do to remind yourself of the concepts and the strategies, because they don't just roll off the top of our tongue or just spill out of our brains. We have to have visual cues ourselves to remind us, what should I be asking kids about? What should I be talking with kids about? And then over time, it becomes more and more natural to you, more and more in the moment, intentionality. It's been a long couple of months since mid-March when we first went on home quarantine for the COVID-19 pandemic. It is now almost mid-June, It's the beginning of June. And so I realize it's been a long time. Many of you have been at home teaching from home and also parenting at the same time, many of you. And so I give you lots and lots of kudos for being able to get through this. This has not been an easy time. And I just wish you well, and I hope that I hope that when you go back into the classroom, you'll have a re-energized perspective, and you'll have some fun with math concepts. I would usually say at this time, give your kiddos lots of hugs and kisses, but I'm going to have to say, exercise your strategies for whatever social distancing practices or wearing of masks that you're asked to engage in. I'm sorry to say we cannot do lots of hugs and kisses right now while we are still getting through this very dangerous virus. I pray that you've all been safe. I know that many of us have experienced the death or severe illness of loved ones. I've had COVID-19 hit my family, which like many of you may have. And so I just pray that it slows down now and that we all can start getting back to normal soon. And I encourage you to use whatever self-care measures you can to remain engaged, connected, positive, and healthy. And I wish you the best. Take care, everyone. I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye.